it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you every week. This time, we have a weekly chat with Chris Mason. Driven by Freeland Chevrolet. C. Mace, what's up?
Not much. Well, I shouldn't say. I just finished playing hockey with a couple former Preds royalty, Mike Fisher, J.P. Dumont, Cody Bass, Ryan Smith. We played the game of 3-on-3 today. It was pretty intense. Pretty
wow. Awesome.
Where was this?
Was it televised?
It was not. They play every Wednesday. They play out in Leaper's Fork. We had the two... a couple of the Preds' emergency backup goalies that come to the game. So if one of the goalies on the teams get hurt, Dylan Caffrey and Dustin Smith. So it was we had a blast. They do it every week. This is my first time. Skills, he's been out before, but this was my first time. It was awesome.
So this is not in Mike Fisher's backyard next to his cannon?
No. That's just down the road, though. But we'll have to get some footage next time because it was pretty intense stuff. It was awesome.
Wow. So yeah. Who shined?
It's a battle. There's a couple of young pups out there too. A couple of the local coaches here that coach the youth teams. But it was intense, man. It was I'm hurting a little bit right now.
What position did you play, Mace? Were you between the pipes or were you out in the field?
No. I was mostly it was 3-on-3. So I took care of the defensive end of things. Sometimes. I had a couple shots. I just didn't have a good touch around the net there, but it was fun. It was a blast.
Well, we know you're a goal scorer. We know that.
Yeah, well, I can't, not today.
You're one of 12 in the league in the history, so we know you can score.
Or at least get credit for
it. That's interesting. Well, let's just stay right there. Let's stay in between the pipes. Let's just get things through your goalie eyes through 48 games. Well, what do you see out of Pekka and UC right now through 48 games?
Well, it's really been, you know, they're no different than really what the team's been like. I think it's been really, you know, inconsistent. And a lot of times as a goaltender, I say this all the time, is you are, to a certain extent, a product of what's happening in front of you. You know, you can go on stretches, and both of these guys are – that type of goalie that can go on long stretches and really carry a team. But after a while, it's tough to sustain that for an entire season. And I feel that, you know, I feel that both of their games right now are coming around. But it just seems too like, you know, anytime you think that they're getting momentum or, you know, they're starting to turn the corner, Pekka put an unbelievable performance against Buffalo. And even last game, I thought he was playing really well against Toronto, but then he gets the goal, you know, off his defenseman, and then that one where he gets knocked out of the way, and all of a sudden you let in four goals. You know, it's a four-goal game when it really should have been two. So it's just really tough for these guys, this team. I think they're all intertwined together to just get over the hump of this fragile state of mind where, you know, they win a game, and you feel like, you know, it's like we do. We talk about, you feel like, all right, here we go, and then they have that stretch again that Willie was talking about during the game, those little stretches that catch them. It's a 5-6-7 minute stretch where it kind of goes south, and then they get it back and, you know, have that big push. But I feel like it's all, you know, you could talk about every position on the team like that, and it's a group thing, and I really don't, it's got to take something for this team to get over. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's, I kind of feel like they've maybe hit it a couple times this year, but maybe they haven't, so it's really tough to put a finger on.
I think this is a really good test of the blend between analytics and the eye test, right? Because when you watch Pekka Rinne and UC Saros each night, there have been a number of games like Monday that you just laid it out perfect, Mace. You watch the game and you're like, I don't think the goalie played bad, per se, whether it's UC or Pekka. But at the end of the night, they've given up four goals.
Yeah.
And so the analytics have this big picture thing of they show the high danger chances and what's your expected save percentage and what's the expected goals against average. And Rinne and Saros are both below average in expected goals allowed or whatever the exact stat is. They're both below par, below average, and certainly below average for them because they're usually well above average. But the eye test doesn't tell me that they're playing bad. So that's where you really have to dig down deep to try to solve or find what the answer is, because the bottom line is they have to have better results.
Well, and when you look at you look at the difference too, and you're talking about the numbers, you're really talking about cutting off half a goal a game, one goal every two games. It's not like it's this insurmountable, thing that they got to let, three less goals a game or whatever it is. It's really minuscule. But at the end of the day, that half a goal every game, or that goal every two games, that's three or four extra points, in the bank that you could have. So it is a big deal. It's not like they're giving up bad goals, but that one extra save, or that Toronto game though too, like it really, really could have been, they could have given up seven or eight goals. I mean, Pekka made a ton of really high end, high danger saves in that second period and even in that first part of the third period to keep them within striking distance. But I really think my whole take on this team right now is they're in a situation, all right, you are where you are. There's nothing you can do about what's been done. Yes, it's been disappointing. Yes, we've got guys that, haven't played up to their potential yet. What are you going to do about it? Well, you know what? It hasn't gone. We're not fighting for the first in the Central. That's reality is they're underdogs now. Nobody's talking about the Nashville Predators as a threat to win the Central Division, to make a long run in the playoffs. That can be a good thing for this team if they really embrace that. Because inside that dressing room, whatever we say, whatever the fans say, whatever the experts say, really doesn't matter, because what matters is how they feel about their team inside that room. And if they actually have that belief, and to really try to take that underdog role, but an underdog, you have that chip on your shoulder. You're always trying to prove people wrong. You're always trying to say, you go ahead and say that about us. We'll show you guys. We'll prove you wrong, but you got to come out and play like that. And to me, that's the biggest thing. I think that's kind of like what John Hines said coming in. Hey, it's not the tactics. It's about playing with that, that urgency and that fire every single night. We got to get all the guys to get on board and start doing that. So I think that's been their biggest issue. And to me, that's what's led to the inconsistency.
Chris Mason is with us, and he is brought to you by our friends at Freeland Chevrolet. His report every, what day is today? Wednesday at 1 o'clock. So, Mace, let me ask you about what they're trying to do today. We've seen the evolution, and it's interesting how John Hines is now making, I think, the same observation that Peter Laviolette had made, and that is that the way that the forwards are deployed, you really have two choices. Do you try to have four balanced lines where everybody's playing in their true position for the most part, but you're trying to spread your talent across four lines, or do you slide somebody out of position? For example, tonight it looks like Matt Duchene will be playing on the wing, and then you have a little bit more of loading up the front two lines than having a checking line and then having a fourth line that's probably going to play a little bit less. They've tried both. Neither one has really stuck. But now they rotate back and take a look at Matt Duchene on the wing. So I'm curious how that will work.
Yeah, well, you know what? Load the guys up. I think, you'd probably agree with me. I don't think there's been an issue with the third or fourth line, if you want to call them that, all season. It's been all, switched around and done different ways because they're trying to spark those top two lines and get them going. And it's been really hard-pressed to even find a long stretch where one of those top two lines have carried the team, and I think that's really what they're trying to desperately find is at least get one of your top two lines to be really dominant. We had the Joppa line going for so many years, and they get on those stretches where they would single-handedly carry it through a five-game winning streak. Obviously, I need other elements as well, but they'd be putting up points every night, really tough to match against, and you get the other team's best, but they would continue to find ways to get that production. And this year it's just been so sporadic with the top two lines. And you think, you get Matt Duchene in the summer, you think, oh, finally we got that 1-2 punch up top. And that it's almost been opposite this year. You've been getting the majority of the production, from up and down more of a balance throughout the lineup instead of having that offensive heavy top two. But they're going to need to do something to try to get that going. I think that's what they're what John Hines is trying to do, put Matthew Shane there on the wing, try to load that up a little bit and see if they can spark something.
And he will be playing on Ryan Johansson's line, and Mikhail Granlund will be on the other wing. So I don't recall how often Duchesne and Johansson have played, but it's ironic. Those are the two guys that everybody really is looking to, Duchesne and Johansson, to sort of lead the charge. You know, they're certainly out there to be guys who drive the play, who produce offensively. So now they get a chance to play together.
Well, yeah, and you know what? Like, I look at these guys, too. I look at Ryan Johansson, and I look at what he's done when it comes playoff time or, like, crunch time at the end of the season, and he's always risen to that occasion. You know, he's not been a guy that does it for 82 games in terms of that emotional investment, that fiery type of player, but he can definitely do that when he's engaged physically. You can see him out there. It's really in his body language, and he's, you know, he's roughing it up, and he's, you know, not scared to drop the mitts once in a while and have play with an edge. Matthew Shane last year in Columbus, he was their best, one of their best players for the Blue Jackets going down the stretch and in the playoffs. So these guys have that ability to step up when it's crunch time. And to be honest with you, it's probably a little earlier this year than they would have liked, but it's getting to that point where you have to start taking that, you know, playoff mentality, that two out of three mentality, start winning these games and having that urgency, that kind of do or die kind of feeling. And those two guys are prime examples of guys that really could, I think, spark this lineup and really send a jolt into the rest of the team, because you need your best players, your leaders, not only to be your best players, but to play that type of hockey, you know, to let everybody know that you know, they're engaged and they're doing whatever it takes to win. If they're not putting up points while they're out there, you know, banging and doing the right things, getting to the net, and they're playing with that fire and physicality, or whatever the case may be, but you just know that they're emotionally engaged and fired up, ready to go.
Last thing for you, Mace, and we'll set the table for those listening of some tidbits that came out of the morning skate. Of course, Mace and I are still here in Nashville. We're not on this road trip because both games are televised tonight and tomorrow on NBCSN. Of course, Darren will be anchoring our coverage pregame on the radio side starting at 5:30. But Colton Sissons still out, not able to go yet, but he is on the trip. Juuse Saros will be the starting goaltender tonight. And they did give a report on Ryan Ellis. He is at least on the ice starting to skate. And, Mace, we don't have a crystal ball, and you hope that there are no more setbacks. You got to knock on wood, get your lucky rabbit's foot, all of that stuff. Because even if there are no more setbacks, they're going to have to get through a significant amount of more games without Ryan Ellis. So no matter who you got in the lineup, it's a tough place to win in Washington against all that firepower. So another great challenge for this defense corps, as is.
Yeah, this is going to be a really, really tough challenge. That's a tough building to play in, and they're, you know, obviously a top team in that Metro division. So it's going to be really tough, regardless of the situation. They got a lot of firepower over there. Obviously Ovechkin, Oshie, all those guys, Kuznetsov. But it's going to be a team thing, and that's the playoff. If you play a certain way, you know, you can keep those guys, you can limit those guys, and you can take away their time and space. It's a huge commitment, and they're going to need that type of game. And you can't have, not to be able to have the lapses like they did against Toronto, because you saw what that did. A team with very similar offensive weapons on it, they just make you pay. They don't need many opportunities. You give them a couple free ones, it's in the back of your net. So they're going to have to play a really solid game and not have any letdown. Capitals are going to get enough chances on their own. Just can't have those big breakdowns and that big stretch of that 5-minute, 6-minute breakdowns like they've been having, especially for whatever reason. The second period has just been a tough one this year again.
And then tomorrow night is the last game in the month of January, and it's John Hines returning to Newark, and of course PK Subban and Wayne Simmonds, they're suiting up for the Devils. So that'll be some interesting storylines for tomorrow night's game.
Yeah, they got a lot. You know, it's great storylines, but at the end of the day, I want points. They need points. You know, if they can use that for motivation or whatever, you gotta take, you know, you have to take whatever, but 3 out of 4 would be nice, but they have to win one of these games for sure, and that starts with a tough one. And then, you know, you're back-to-back. You go into New Jersey, and, you know, you're playing a team that's really got not much to play for. That's a dangerous team to play against, because you can get in those types of hockey games where it's kind of loosey-goosey or structurally not sound on the other side, and it's easy to kind of get roped into that. So that's going to be a mental challenge for the Predators on that second half of the back-to-back, along with all the storylines attached to it.
Yep, good stuff, Chris, as always. Thanks for doing this. Go get some rest.
Yes, I need it.
All right, Chris Mason.
Get the ice bags out. Get the cold tub.
Oh, yeah, they will be.
No doubt. He's driven by Freeland Chevrolet every week, Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. And as we mentioned, no TV coverage here locally because it's on NBC Sports Network. Mike Tirico, speaking of that, will be on the call tonight for the Predators and the Capitals. We'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour. But right now I want to talk to all the homeowners out there, and I want to talk to you about USS, United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company right here in Middle Tennessee. They've been serving our area since 1994, and they've got more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers. And that should get you to perk up if you own a home, especially if you've noticed recently that maybe doors or windows have been sticking, or some of your walls are bowing, or maybe you've been outside when we've had nice weather and you've noticed maybe some bricks that are cracking or drywall that's separating. Maybe you've got a chimney that's tilting or leaning. These are all signs that maybe something's going on with your house. Depending on the age, that would make sense, right? Or not. Sometimes newer houses, these problems exist too. Either way, get the experts out to your house, that's USS, and have them assess the situation and give you a free estimate. Yeah, I said a free estimate. They believe in their quality of work, they believe in their reputation, and they believe in integrity. And those are all things that should get you excited as a homeowner, especially if you've got a tough situation at your house that you need to get addressed. They're licensed and insured, they're locally owned, and these are all important things. 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. If you need to make an appointment and get the fine folks from USS out to your house, or you can always go to their website, usstn.com. They guarantee their best. Call USS. I brought up the John Hines thing. I know it's tomorrow night. Tonight they play the Capitals, but I was reading a piece on The Athletic because Corey Massasak, is that how you say his name?
Yeah, we had him on our show.
Yep. But I can't remember how to say his last name.
That's correct.
He, of course, covers the Devils. He has already caught up with John Hines and has done a little sit-down getting ready for tomorrow night's game. And just basically,
Q&A.
You know, asking. Yeah, yeah, a little Q&A, yeah.
I think the Tennessean is doing something on it, too. I heard, you know, it's always odd, you know, the writer has to be thinking ahead and what's going to happen. And so John Hines was actually asked about his time in New Jersey before the Maple Leafs game, and I'm sure that was not something he was thinking about,
right?
You know, at the morning skate before they're getting ready to play the Leafs, but he was generous enough to answer a question or two on that, you know, PK Subban connection and everything. So I'm sure that will be talked about a lot, but it's kind of like first things first, you know, for John Hines. But I'm sure there's some excellent insight.
Well, it's
on
just
that.
It's pretty interesting.
All
where
of this has happened so fast.
I was
right?
going to say that's where I was going with this. When you read and you start thinking like, wow, that's right. Like all this happened in like a 3-week window. So John Hines is relieved of his duties. Taylor Hall is shipped out of there, shipped to Arizona, right after him. Ray Shiro is relieved of his duties as Devils GM. And remember earlier, going back earlier, Tom Fitzgerald was down on the bench back at the beginning of the year, right? Early on, I guess, trying to assess what was going on with this team. So there's been like so much turnover in this time frame. He was fired on December 3rd, and just over a month later, he was already back on the bench as a head coach here. And just all the stuff that New Jersey's done in that 3 or 4 week window. It's been a lot of turnover. And obviously they're not done. I mean, I would suspect they'll be sellers, right? At the deadline?
Oh, I think there's no question about it.
I mean, I think people are going to be calling up New Jersey big time.
They probably already have been
Okay. What are you willing to part ways with?
On top of that, of course, they just made the change in the general manager, so the guy making the deals is different.
Yep. That's what I said. Shiro's out.
So if I'm a general manager, I'm testing to see if I can get into the, you know, let's see what the new guy, what makes him tick. You know, just like Bill Guerin up in Minnesota. They got to feel out, you know, how he wants to go about things. So it's been interesting.
So I wonder how he will handle tomorrow night being back.
And it's a back-to-back, so there won't be a morning skate. I don't know if they'll even go over to the arena tomorrow. So that's probably why they had to do some of this in advance. That's probably why he chose to answer some of these questions on the front end before he gets there, so that day can be preparing for the game that night. It's probably a smart move on his part.
Yeah, because you're right. There probably won't be.
It'll be show up and
any
go.
Availability.
No. I think you have to have
something,
but I think you can do it at like 5 o'clock. You know, a couple hours before the game, keep it pretty short. And most of the writers, you know, at that point, all of the storytelling about the backstory has got to be in the can by then. You know, you're going to come up with a story the day after they play. Probably doesn't have as much effect. So a lot of it will be like we're seeing it right now.
So I guess he's supposed to be calling us. So with that being said, we should probably go on and step away quickly. And hopefully we'll have Mike Tirico on the other side. But first, you're going to give us a word about the good folks at Lee Company.
All right, Lee Company. 615-567-1000. I try to pound that phone number into your head because there's a lot of different reasons why you're going to want to have that memorized. But what I like to say is build a relationship with Lee Company and you'll not have the crisis because you have that year-long relationship. You're going to be on top of all the things that make your house run properly. Your heating unit, your cooling unit, your plumbing system, your electric system. It's great to know that those units have been checked and you haven't gone too long neglecting something that needs to get addressed. That is the beauty of the home maintenance plan for Lee Company. So you pay a small monthly fee, $8.50, $9 a month, well worth it because you'll get discounts on any repairs that have to be made and you'll get those checkups and they'll find the small problems before they become big problems and you're sitting around the house when it's 30 degrees outside and your heat doesn't work. Lee Company. Go to their website, leecompany.com, or give them a call at 615-567-1000. Lee Company, proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators.
Tonight, Predators in Washington to take on the Capitals. Puck drop slated for 6:30 p.m. our time. I'll have pregame for you at 5:30. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. That's on the radio side of things. On the television side of things, it'll be on NBC Sports Network, which is why Willie is next to me today on radio, because Fox Sports Tennessee will not be airing the game. It'll be NBC Sports Network, and the man who'll be on the call is our next guest. Mike Tirico is on the line. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. How are you?
Great. You know, we haven't had a chance to see you do a lot of hockey, so have you enjoyed it?
Well, there would be a good reason for that, because I haven't done a lot of hockey.
Yeah, I know. Was it last year, your first year? Is that right?
I had never done it before. Truth be told, a couple of years ago, during the Preakness, as hockey fans know, Eddie Olchek, our lead analyst, is a great handicapper for the horse races as well and works on our Triple Crown coverage. And I've always been a big hockey fan from growing up in New York as a kid. And we were watching the hockey, and I'm so into him picking Edzo's brain constantly about the playoffs and what's going on and lines and can they do this and do that and styles and all that junk. And so we're sitting there, and one of our executive producer for the entire network, Sam Flood, we're sitting there, and the challenge went out. Like, could you do a hockey game? We're like, sure. Yeah, and you're going to back down from it. So about 4 months later, they're like, okay, hey, we got a few on the schedule for you. Like, okay, we're going to find out if I can or not. So I did three last year, including a playoff game. I loved it. I had a blast. I get a chance to do a couple of games here, starting with this one tonight. So we're looking forward to it. We're over at the arena. The Preds didn't skate, as you may know this morning, but they were over there playing soccer in the back, as usual. We talked to John Hines for a bit. Very interesting time and a very important stretch here for the Preds. I know Willie's getting ready for the West Canada trip coming up starting next week. It's going to be really an important run for this team to see what February and March are going to look like.
Yeah, nothing like Canada in February.
Yep.
Dress warm.
Canada in January was quite cold. It was minus 32 just a couple weeks ago when we were at Edmonton. So we got that going for us.
And upon return to Nashville, it was like almost 100-degree difference in temperature from when you took off to when you landed?
Yeah, you've done your homework. That's exactly what we were – it was almost exactly 100 degrees difference from the time we took off to the time we landed.
Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, that should be right around the time where it's ridiculously cold. So enjoy that three-game stretch out there. But it is beautiful. You can say that.
Yep.
Two years ago, Mike, the two of us were in Winnipeg when the Predators played them in the playoffs, and
yeah.
It was second round. That was probably what, Willie? Early May? Is that right?
Yeah, late April, early May. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was still freezing cold up there. Not to that level, but it was still cold.
I remember watching a bunch of that series because a forward, not a top six forward, but a next six forward for the Jets, Andrew Kopp, who has been there, God, I think for about 6 years now. Andrew went to the same high school that my son did in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I've watched Andrew from when he was a high school football quarterback as a freshman all the way through. So I keep a close eye on the Jets during the year. And that was a heck of a series, obviously, with Nashville and Winnipeg. But I do remember that was a second rounder early May, right around Derby time. I actually remember watching that game in the place where we usually watch hockey playoffs over in Louisville. So fun times. And, you guys have been regulars in the playoffs. And, I'll never forget the loudest building I had heard since doing NBA games at Arco Arena in Sacramento with that corrugated metal roof were the games that I went to. I went to the game in the finals, brought my son down to Nashville for the finals games, and that was the loudest I've ever heard any building. I was there, and everybody was standing, and I'm like, okay, great. We'll get to the first TV timeout. This is awesome. Now we'll sit down, enjoy the game, get to the first break under 14. And then everybody stands back up. I go, okay, so we're in this for the whole game. I got it now. And, man, it was a great, great atmosphere and a great building. And, candidly, we're missing a little bit of that because the team isn't giving the fans something to get off their feet and cheer about.
Yeah. Who gave you tickets, Charles Barkley or Nick Saban? Which one?
No.
Because they were both here.
Even better, my boss is at NBC. So that worked. it was the right time to work in the right place.
Well, you've done a lot of different sporting events. What was the biggest challenge, Mike, kind of gearing up to start doing hockey games?
Yeah, well, I mean, for Willie and, for the guys like Doc Emmerich and Kenny Albert and everyone else, look, we all have sports that we do, and you know that there's nuance involved in it, and there's comparative difficulties in each sport. Whether basketball, it's your proximity to the court, the relentless night in and night out of the NBA. For football, it's the scheme and trying to understand personnel because there are so many guys coming in and out. So each one has its own unique set of difficulties. In baseball, it's how much do you talk, how much do you lay out, all that. I've got to tell you, hockey's the toughest. I have such a respect for Willie, for, like I said, Kenny and Doc and all the people who do this on a night in, night out basis, John Forslund. It's hard as heck, man. It is hard because of line changes. The second period the other night, John Hines just he put the defensive pairs in one of those lotto drums, and it was just kind of, all right, we're going to start this period. We'll throw Yossi and Fabro out there. So all those things, you get in a pattern, but you can't be in a pattern. Your identification has to be instant. In a fast-moving game, you almost have to be ahead of the play. So it's a unique and very, I would say, out of the ordinary challenge for play-by-play guys to keep up with the speed times the personnel changes that happen as the action's going. It's a big challenge. It's a lot of fun. I'm sure it's going to take me at least a period or so to get back up to speed tonight, but that's okay. We'll figure it out anyway.
Mike Tirico on the line with us. Last thing on my end before I flip this over to Willie. I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the big story that came out on Sunday and Kobe Bryant, and certainly your history with calling the game. And I believe you were on the call for his final game, the 60 points, right?
I was. The game aired on ESPN. It was kind of surreal in 100 significant ways because of the things that were said and Kobe not being with us anymore and his daughter being at the game. It was also a little surreal to me because I was sitting back next to my partner, Hubie Brown. I've almost 3.5 years since I left ESPN for NBC. And, kind of be back on ESPN and calling the NBA again, it was just kind of odd and just a shock to the system, like the whole thing was. That night was that night may, in some ways, encapsulate what Kobe was all about. The Lakers ended up that year 17-65. It was the worst season in Lakers history, which followed the prior season, which was at that point the worst season in Lakers history. They brought a Hollywood Finals type energy to the building that night. Kobe, you know, we didn't know how many minutes he had in him because it was a breaking down at the end. And he put on a show. He took 50 shots to score 60 points. It was an incredible performance. And if you didn't know the work ethic, the passion, the desire of greatness that Kobe Bryant was motivated by, if you just saw that game, you'd say, wow, this guy's wired a little bit differently than everyone else. And it's a tragedy for all the other families involved with the other seven that we didn't know and didn't have this human connection to. But Kobe and his daughter to be there going to basketball and travel basketball, and everybody who has a kid who's involved in sports has been traveling by a different mode of transportation in all likelihood. But we could all relate. It all felt so very real to us. It's just been really a surreal and awful couple of days, to be honest.
Mike Tirico is with us from NBC. He will be on the call tonight on NBC Sports Network, Predators and the Washington Capitals. And Mike, you've got a great perspective for this question, but it sort of dawned on me, and Darren was watching the same tennis match. There was a gentleman from the Nashville area, born and raised here, that was playing Roger Federer, and he had 7 match points.
Yeah, I know.
And
oh, yeah.
Federer saves them all, and he goes on. He's injured. He's battling through, and he wins the match in 5 sets. But it dawned on me that is the kind of characteristic that sets apart the truly great athletes like Kobe Bryant, and Federer would be one of them. And you've got a great perspective. You call these different sports, so you rarely see that kind of greatness. And so that's the kind of thing that separates them.
You're right on. That's exactly it. And that's what kind of comes to mind as you're talking about Kobe this week. There's not a drastic difference between most of the athletes at the elite professional level. There is some, but there's not a significant one, okay? I think that margin of difference in talent just shrinks when you go from high school sports to collegiate sports to professional sports. But when you see the guys who separate to the 0.0001% of the top, the all-time greats, you just see a different gear. And I think this social media time, this time where more sports are out and available, and there's more big sponsorship opportunities, so big names like Nike get athletes involved in certain causes or getting athletes involved together. We've seen a whole generation of Federer, Kobe, Serena, all those in that ilk in hockey, Ovechkin here. You see them meet each other and have this incredible respect for each other. You saw Novak Djokovic get very emotional during the Australian Open this week on court talking about Kobe and the friendship that they had made. You've heard all these women's basketball players talk about Kobe's interest in their sport and how they do, and always being available for them as his daughter's building this career. They all can speak the same language that's a little bit different because they are relentless. And there was a story told the other day about a player who played very limited time in the NBA and then eventually was Kobe's teammate. And he was in there shooting, and he was like shooting for 2 hours. And Kobe was still out there on the floor at the other end, and he kept going and going. And they finally asked Kobe, do you remember that day? And Kobe said, yeah, I kept going because I wasn't going to leave while you were still working. I wasn't going to let anybody outwork me. And that's what made Kobe Bryant, in addition to being a great player, an all-time legend.
Well, another segue, I guess, with the Titans season. Of course, you're heavy involved with the NBC coverage of the NFL. The Titans get eliminated by Patrick Mahomes, and he played almost dead letter perfect to eliminate them. He's had an unbelievable postseason. So many people looking forward to seeing him on the biggest stage because he might have a chance. Who knows? It's early to become one of these guys that we're talking about. But give us your thoughts on this matchup.
Yeah, it feels that way a little bit. You know, I got busy with some other stuff last week, and the last couple of days have gone so fast. I really have wanted to go back and watch the AFC Championship game one more time, because at 10-0, I was like, you know, I did the Titans-Patriots game on national radio, So I had seen the Titans and prepared for that game, and I was not shocked that they won. We were talking about it going in, that if you could strip the uniforms and the history away from the Patriots and you just prepared for the game, you thought the Titans were the better team. And then we see them in the next round with Baltimore. And then it's 10-0. Like, okay, this is real now. This is they can do this. And I want to go back and watch the Titans' third and fourth offensive possession of that first half, because I just felt like after Kansas City scored, maybe it wasn't the play calling, maybe it was just execution, maybe it was the defensive adjustment, but it felt like the game quickened and Tennessee couldn't keep pace with the quicker game. And I bring all of that up because I think that's what I'm looking for in this game. San Francisco wants to keep the ball for 8 minutes, make you miserable, and just 3 yards, 5 yards, 8 yards, first down, run, better on the offensive line, all that stuff. When Kansas City does have success, and you think they will have a little, what does that do to San Francisco? Is San Francisco disciplined enough to keep working at what has been working? That's one big thing. And then the other factor, guys, I think San Francisco is going to need to throw to set up their run, and I think Kansas City is going to need to run to set up their throwing. And I think both teams get back to what they do best by what they do poorest offensively. And the one who can execute in that phase of the game, I think, is the team that walks away with a win.
Mike, if you got time for one more quick one. I was reading a bio of yours. This is a fun one for Darren and I, because Darren and I can remember vividly, this would have been like 16 or 17 years ago, we were doing a show. We were fortunate enough to get Bob Costas on our show, thanks to our colleague Pete Weber, who you'll be alongside tonight.
I saw Pete this morning.
Yes, I'm sure you did. And so we were so excited. We probably spent all day trying to figure out what we're going to ask Bob Costas, right? I noticed on your bio, because you have the connection at Syracuse, you were doing a radio show, and your first guest was Bob Costas. I can't imagine what that was like for you. But what were the questions you asked him?
Oh, God. Well, we were in Syracuse, so we were able to do some reminiscing on Bob's path. Bob's days as a minor league hockey announcer in Syracuse, where they were never given a roster of the second team, where they came out in all different uniform numbers, and Bob picked a certain player, and that player had the greatest night of his life, even though he didn't know it, because he was passing to himself, he was setting himself up, he was forechecking, he never came off the ice. And one of those deals back in the day when you could make stuff up and nobody would be noticing. But Bob's become a friend because of our Syracuse connection, and you couldn't ask for anybody to be more gracious as he ended his run at the Olympics in terms of being supportive of what I was going to do. And, you know, you don't replace a Bob Costas, you're the next guy who has the job, because he's irreplaceable. And he has been nothing but good. And as a matter of fact, we saw each other Wednesday of last week in New York at the memorial service for David Stern. And we exchanged text messages on Sunday after the Kobe thing, because Bob happened to be on CNN. I was on NBC doing stuff. And we were just talking about how, you know, it's just so awful to be there talking about all that stuff and just didn't seem so real. But Bob's become somebody who I've loved talking to. The coolest thing, guys, of working at NBC at this time was to be around Bob and to be around Al Michaels, two guys who I've idolized and looked up to, and now they're teammates. They have been teammates. You work on the same shows as them, and just to sit and hear their stories of the miracle on ice and all that other stuff, it's been one of the great parts of my career to be able to enjoy this kind of run right now.
Mike, if you see Pete again, you can ask him about, what was it, 18 years ago, Willie, the three of us. It was April. We left Tigers opening day at Comerica versus the Twins. The three of us, or Willie and I and Pete Weber, were walking to the streets headed to the Joe to see the Predators and the Red Wings that night. And Pete was telling us such great stories that I almost lost my head with the street sign.
Yep.
You can ask him. He loves that story.
Okay.
Yeah, walked right into a street sign.
Walked right in, and I thought I lost my head.
Yeah, Pete is that compelling of a storyteller.
He's still mortified to this day that I didn't lose my head. I wasn't decapitated.
That is funny. I will ask him about that. You know, Joe Louis Arena is now, I don't know, when the Preds came through Detroit, I'm not exactly sure, but Joe Louis Arena is about half torn down. They are in the process of deconstructing that thing, and they're going to do some development on that site in a little bit, but now, the new arena's been up for a couple of years, and it's a really nice building. But they're also reconstructing the hockey team, too.
Yeah, no kidding. Very good point.
They're last place in the league, which is kind of odd to see after all the years of their successful run and a quarter century going to the playoffs. But this happens. It's cyclical, and so I'm interested to see how your guys, how the Preds are going to handle this stretch here. It's a huge game. You hate to say at the end of January these games are big, but, man, you're going on that West Coast trip. You got Vegas coming in on Saturday. It is not easy for the next half dozen games, and you have to get back in the mix before too long. There's just too many teams between you and that last wild card spot at this point.
Why couldn't the Red Wings be like this back when they were in the Predators division instead of winning cups?
Exactly. Hey, a lot of us in Detroit, I've lived there for 20-some-odd years, a lot of us in Detroit spent a lot of April and May nights up at midnight, 1 a.m., because it seemed like the Red Wings always draw a Pacific time zone team in the playoffs. And I swear, worker productivity had to stink around Detroit for stretches in April and May because of that.
Mike, good stuff. Really appreciate the visit, as always, and have fun tonight calling the game between the Capitals and the Predators.
I'll do my best. At least I know we've got the Nashville audience. They won't be tuned over to listen to you, Willie, but that's all right. Enjoy the work you guys do. I look forward to catching up with you down the line.
Thank you, Mike.
You'll do great.
Take care, guys.
All right. That is Mike Tirico, NBC play-by-play man. And, of course, as you just heard,
he's really good.
NBC Sports Network tonight, Predators and Capitals. 6:30 puck drop. We'll come back, wrap up the show next. One thing that stood out to me on that Detroit trip.
This was 2003. By the way, the Tigers, just for a little historical perspective, they would go on to lose, I think, 119 games that year. It's one of the losingest teams of all time. They almost beat the 62 Mets. In fact, they might have tied them.
It was a really, 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 really bad team. Who was the skipper then?
Alan Trammell.
Alan Trammell.
Yeah. One of the legendary, now he's in the Hall of Fame. And so he did not.
Beloved up there, not
oh,
beloved
man.
With that team.
But he was not able to put himself in at shortstop.
No.
Nor did he have Lou Whitaker at second anymore.
He did not. Nor did he have Kirk Gibson.
Nope. Kirk Gibson might have been a coach. I feel like he brought some of those guys in on his staff. Like it was a real nostalgic.
There was no Cecil
coaching
Fielder.
Staff, but they just had nothing.
No, they were really, really bad. I remember it was cold. Imagine that. It was very, very cold on opening day in Detroit.
They went 43-119.
Yikes. I remember telling you guys, remember I sat in the press box and I could not figure out. I was trying to figure out why no one was sitting around or no one would talk. Jack Morris was sitting in front of me, and no one would sit next to him. And I noticed throughout the course of the game that no one,
speaking of Hall of Famers,
would talk to Jack Morris. And I'm like, why is no one talking to Jack Morris? I didn't know at the time. Remember, this is 17 years ago. And I remember that was part of our talk, and Pete's like, you know why? Well, I'll clean it up. He was a jerk. People didn't like him. He was hard to deal with. Crusty guy. And I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. Probably rubbed a lot of people the wrong way in his time here. But I was just amazed because as somebody who didn't know that, just observing him as a player, I mean, he was incredible.
They were playing the Twins, and he had quite the history with the Twins,
right,
as well as all the Braves fans know.
Jack Morris.
So I guess neither group wanted to talk to him.
Well, I remember. Do you remember who he ended his career with?
He does Twins stuff. He does stuff on their Twins network now, on their TV side, which I never would have thought that he would be a media guy. He's like a pre-post game guy, I think. Does analysis for them.
Do you know his final stop?
The Indians.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was covering
the Blue Jays.
I was covering them when he was there. He was on that 95 team that went to the World Series.
He was a shell of his former self, though.
Well, the story goes is I guess he had a big piece of land with a house in like Montana or something.
Yeah.
And he would go back. It drove the Indians crazy. Like he would come in, make a start, and then head to Montana. And he wouldn't show back up until the next start. Whether it was Cleveland or wherever, he would just join the team. So he was never with the team. He would just come in, do his start, do his stuff, and then leave. And it drove him crazy. They did not like that. And like you said, he was – like if he was Jack Morrison, his prime.
Then that's easier to put up with.
It's a little bit easier to put up with. But when it's not the Jack Morrison, his prime, they didn't appreciate that. Good show. Good way to end today. Wow. Mike Tirico.
Yeah, if you
fun.
Missed that interview, by the way, go back and listen to it. That was really good stuff.
Ryan Porth filling in today with Floyd Reese. He'll be filling in for Jared. So they are out. You're going to need to listen to their show today. That is coming up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. See you then. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay
here. Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.